야.
예, Tim Hasselbeck, every Wednesday at this time. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. Our show brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joint Whiskey. Smoother than smooth. Carolina Hurricanes and the Predators game last night at Bridgestone Arena was postponed. The Hurricanes now have shut down their facilities. They are closed, effective immediately, and they will remain closed until further notice. And the Hurricanes are postponing all games through the weekend, or the 23rd, so I guess that would be through Saturday. So, yeah, I guess through the weekend. So we'll see how that all plays out with the Hurricanes. Tim, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Well, we're doing fantastic. We've been waiting all week to give you the proper praise on the air. You told us for weeks Arthur Smith was going to be the next head coach of the Falcons, and Arthur Smith is the next head coach of the Falcons, so good job by you.
Schefter, I need to get into the breaking news business.
You should.
You think so?
Good call. Yeah. I didn't hear anybody else blasting that out there, and you were on this show. And we looked at the odds. It wasn't like Arthur Smith was the favorite. You know, he was like the day before he was hired by the odds makers. But
yeah, I forget when I said it to you guys, probably a few weeks prior to
several
it
weeks, yeah.
Look, I think a lot of times, and this shouldn't be a surprise. I mean, it would happen in every, business that exists out there, I would think, is that, whether you have somebody in mind, prior to firing, somebody, or once you start interviewing candidates, you're going to have a favorite. Like there's going to be somebody at the top of the list. And, from what I knew, it was pretty clear early on that he was at the top of their list. So, I think that this idea that, all these teams go into these coaching searches kind of wide open with everyone on the same playing field, like, it's not accurate. That's not how it works. It's no different than, look, if you're going to hire somebody to paint your house and, you had somebody recommend, a painter, that person is going to come to the bidding process, with an upper hand over somebody else. And so I think that's a lot of times how these things work. People are going into these interview processes with, in some cases, like, it's your job to lose. And I'm not saying that that's how, slanted this was in Atlanta, but I think it was a pretty strong feeling early on that he was the guy that they wanted. And it was probably going to come down to who are the other teams that really wanted him and how much competition were they going to have for him if he was going to continue to pull, keep coaching the Titans as they advance.
When you hear that maybe Dean Pease could come out of retirement, you're thinking, oh, great. We'd welcome him back here. This would be fantastic for Mike Vrabel and his staff. And then you hear, and could join the Falcons staff and Arthur Smith. What do you make of that?
I don't know. Like I think knowing what I know about Dean Pease, I think part of the thing that happens to guys like him, or that they've done something for so long, and this idea of retiring and not doing something that you know how to do and you love doing, not doing that is not as great or as fun as it maybe seemed when you decided to step away. So look, I don't know if it's going to happen. I don't think that it's fair to consider it a shot at Mike Vrabel or the Titans. I think it's kind of more, I think you see this a lot, guys that have coached for decades that I don't want to say they don't know what to do with themselves. Dean Pease has plenty of other hobbies, and he's an amazing piano player, musician. He's, he's got other things about him as a person other than a football coach. But there are very few things that can replicate the feeling of being a part of a team and the competition that's associated with it.
Tell you what, he needs to be careful. He's getting close to getting into boxing status. He keeps retiring and unretiring. I'm just saying.
I think for most people, it seems like a great idea. I never remember or never forget talking to, kind of have a conversation with Judy Coughlin, who's Tom Coughlin's wife, and Chris Snee, who's Tom's son-in-law. And, you know, it was like he was out of football for a few years between, you know, Jacksonville and the Giants. And, you know, he had done some work on TV, but he was around the house a lot. And they basically, everyone was like, he's miserable. He doesn't like this at all. And he's so miserable that he's making everybody else miserable. And I was like, wait a second. No. You need to be doing what you feel like you are called to do. And I just think that there's a lot of guys that feel that way, especially if they've been coaching for as long as some of these guys have been coaching.
How do you go about filling now the void left behind from Arthur Smith? I mean, that was the bright spot of the – I mean, that was number one on the list of things that worked the best last season was the offense. That is a big void, big shoes to fill. How do you go about trying to fill the new OC position?
I think you have to find somebody that has experience calling plays. I don't think you bring in somebody that's new to calling plays, and I think that you bring somebody in that, you know, has had success doing some of the things that they've had success doing. So, look, the movement around the league with guys that have legitimate and really good experience calling plays and the guys that are available, it's extensive. So, I don't want to start throwing out candidates and things like that, but like, I'll give you an example. Like, I'd be stunned if Brian Schottenheimer's name wasn't like at the top of the list. Now, I have no idea if there's any relationship, good or bad, between Mike Vrabel and Brian Schottenheimer, but like, that's one for me where I would think there's going to be something to that. Like, I would guess. And there are going to be a number of others as well. I'll give you another example. Like, I'm surprised a little bit, and again, not positive of the relationship, but, like, Bill O'Brien, you know, quickly making a move to go back to college, I think is an interesting one. Like, had he been available, like, that would be...
Now wait a minute. Has he taken the Alabama job?
I don't know that he's taken it. I think the way that people have reported it with such certainty, you know, I don't think that people do that. That's not to say that there maybe wouldn't be a way for him to back out of it, but the way that people have, you know, reported on that, I guess I would have to go back and look who they were again. But most people aren't reporting at that level of certainty without there being, you know, legitimacy to it, I don't find. So those people are people you talk to. I think, you know, it sounds like Doug Peterson wants to take some time off maybe, but, like, you know, if he doesn't find a head coaching job, like, that would be one that you need to consider. So, like, there are some, like really, really impressive guys that have experienced calling plays. Many of them have experience as, you know, head coaches. And, you know, depending on what the Titans do defensively with how they call plays and do things like that, it could be a huge asset to Mike Vrabel to have somebody on his coaching staff with, you know, that type of experience, you know, as a head coach and kind of manager to work with.
Talking to Tim Hasselbeck. Tim, this was our debate in the last segment before you came on. Is Philip Rivers a Hall of Famer?
Yeah, I think that he is. I think when you look at some guys that are in and, you know, the game has changed, But as we get like further and further down the line of, you know, away from his time as a player, and we start stacking his numbers up against other people, I think the case is going to end up being so overwhelming that, you know, what he was able to do over 17 years, like the amount of production would end up, you know, probably getting him in.
Okay.
Now, I will say this, though, Willie. I would say this, like, in saying that, like, it might be one of the, like, I could see it being like an Andre Reed type thing where it's like, well, how long did the guy wait? Because I think that people would send Eli in and Ben in prior to him. You know, they're going to be close to each other in terms of years when they're up for their candidacy. There's going to be other players, obviously. And I just don't think people will put him in prior to putting those other guys in. And I think that some of those guys, Eli in particular, probably ultimately end up getting in, but are going to end up waiting a while to get in, potentially. And so because of that, you know, Phillip Rivers could be in his, you know, he could be 60 years old when he gets in.
Yeah, you hit on all the things we were kicking around in the last segment. So here's the next one. Of course, it pertains a lot to the Titans, where they go next. But what's the vision in your mind? What are the options for the Colts at quarterback now?
Well, again, I think there's going to be movement at that position as well. Like, who knows how much, but, you know, Deshaun Watson, Matt Stafford, Carson Wentz potentially. Like, there'll be people that are moving around. Like, what's going to happen to Dak Prescott? What, you know, I just feel like there's a number of different things. You know, you look at the situation in New Orleans, like, you know, what does happen there? Like, is Taysom Hill the starting quarterback? Does Jameis Winston end up getting an opportunity again? Like, so, look, I think that they, I think there are options. I think there are good options. Matthew Stafford would be, you know, really high on my list. You know, I think the likelihood of getting a trade for someone like Watson in the division probably wouldn't happen. But I just think there's going to be so much movement at the position that, you know, some guys that seem safe may not be, and I think they'll end up being good options out there.
All right, so you've referenced Watson a couple of times. The New York media is going wild with this. I saw the headline. What is it? What are you waiting for? Or something? I can't remember what they did, but the Jets certainly have a package that could be pretty enticing to try to make a play for Watson. I guess the real question is, where are the Texans? Do they see it as a dead end? And what would be the neighborhood of what you're looking for in a package that you might consider trading one of the best quarterbacks in the game?
Well, one of the best quarterbacks in the game, who, by the way, I think you essentially have him under contract for like the next 5 years.
Yeah, he's locked in. And you don't have to pay the prorated signing bonus, which saves you money if you're the team that grabs him.
Yeah, I would start all of this by saying, if I'm Houston, I'm not doing this. Like, I get he's mad, you know, I get all that stuff, but whoever you hire, David Culley or Eric Bieniemy or whoever your next head coach is, right? You immediately put on the full court press of, hey, look, man, like, this is different, okay? It's not the same guys as before. You know, you were set up to fail. You know, the McNairs love you. It's why they've paid you the way they've paid you. Like, let's go do something special here. Like, to me, that's the conversation. Like, that's what you do. I just don't know. Like, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't. I want to move him. It's not his choice. So I think I see it quite differently than everyone else. I know everyone's kind of gotten, you know, pretty high on this, like, you know, player empowerment kick and things like that. But the reality is like, you're still a player. You're still an employee. Like, you know, there's part of what's gone on there that, look, is he your most important player? Of course he is. Do you want to, you know, keep a good relationship with him? Absolutely. But, like, you're not asking him to tape ankles. You know, he's not a trainer. So, you know, you're not asking him to manage the salary cap. You know, there's part of it that's like, do your job. And I think that if I were part of that organization, that's the perspective I would take on it with him. Like, that's not to say that his opinion doesn't matter. Of course it matters. But this idea that the quarterback hires the GM and coach, you know, or has that amount of you know, influence on it, like, what are his qualifications of being successful at doing that in the past? And I'm not meaning just for Deshaun Watson. I mean for anybody, whether it was Tom Brady or whether it was Drew Brees or anybody. So, I don't know. I don't know if you guys see it differently. You keep him happy. But, like, so is Ryan Tannehill get to choose the next offensive coordinator?
Look, yeah, I see what you're saying. It comes up a lot with the superstars, you know, LeBron and, you know, guys like that. So, it's a...
And it's worked to an extent. And I was going to bring that up
with
you,
but it also hasn't worked in other places, too. But it's worked enough to where it's going to keep coming up.
Because
where has it worked in football? Like, where has it worked in football?
Yeah.
And probably not that many people have tried it in football, right? There hasn't been, especially
with
the salary cap, the way it's, and the way the game is, right? There's so many players. It's not like basketball where one guy changes everything so much. That maybe you have more leverage in basketball just because of the numbers.
Yeah, I mean, it's so different. Like, yeah, of course. Like, in basketball, and I'm certainly not a basketball expert, but, like, it's a very different deal. Like, it's a completely, you know, different situation. I guess my thing is, like, this isn't – I know some people have kind of tried to portray it as, like, you know, kind of like a shut up and dribble situation. I don't think that that's what this is. Like the point is, like, you know, teams that hire coaches, you know, they're hiring search firms. There's a long interview process on a number of different things. Like, it's people that should be qualified. People that have been hiring people in the past have experience actually hiring people. And so, you know, this idea that players, you know, somehow know who would be good to hire. They may even know who they like to work with, but that's very different than, you know, hiring somebody for all of the things that you have to consider in terms of hiring a head coach or a offensive coordinator or a general manager.
So Tim Hasselbeck with us, ESPN NFL analyst. So if something happens with the Jets, whether it's Watson or someone else, and they get a different quarterback, where does Sam Darnold fall in all of this? Because I don't think he's maybe what everybody thought he would be, but I also recognize the fact that he's been with the Jets, and he hasn't really been given a fighting chance to be what everybody thought he could be. So where does he fall into all this?
Well, I mean, where he falls in all of this, and what people have to realize, is Joe Burrow is older than Sam Darnold. Joe Burrow is not even, or excuse me, Sam Darnold isn't even 24 years old yet. Like, you know, this idea that you give up on, you know, Sam Darnold with what he's experienced, you know, with Adam Gase, and then you have the evidence of, you know, what Ryan Tannehill has done away from Adam Gase with someone else. I think there would be a lot of people really, really excited about, you know, what Sam Darnold could ultimately end up becoming. So, you know, what happens to him, it kind of goes back to that, you know, original question about, you know, what do the Colts do? It's like, well, if there's all of this movement and we think some places are safe, like say you thought the Jets were safe because Sam Darnold's just 23 years old, but – yeah, look, it can't be repaired in Houston, and there, you know, goes Watson. Okay, well, now Sam Darnold's out there and available. So whether it's New England, Chicago, you know, who knows? The Colts, I mean, all of these different, you know, situations.
Darnold on the Colts, that'd be intriguing.
Yeah, put him with Frank Reich.
I think, like, don't we have to consider a guy's age a little bit? I mean,
sure.
He's not. I mean, I pulled it up as I was saying it. He's 23 years old and 229 wow. days.
I did not know. So Burrow is older than Darnold.
Yes. And Burrow, you know, has played a few games. Whereas, you know, Sam Darnold obviously has, you know, been in the league longer. Now, it hasn't been great, but he's played three NFL seasons at this point.
Did you ever think that you would be in a world, because I can remember listening to Floyd say this time and time again, if a guy's available, like especially when talking about the quarterback position, if the guy's available, then there's something wrong. It's probably not very good. You know, why does the other team not want him? But now we see that there are good quarterbacks in this conversation that are made available for whatever reason. Did you ever mm-hmm. think that you would see it to this level? And it kind of goes back to the whole player power and things like that. But did you ever feel like, oh, it's going to get to a point in the NFL where these good quarterbacks are going to bounce around and not be in the same place for a long time?
I'm a little bit surprised at it. I remember when, like, the Kirk Cousins stuff was going on, I remember saying, you know, everyone needs to be careful. It's a lot easier to get worse than to get better. And look, I think that it's easy to say. Like Washington, they haven't gotten better at quarterback since Cousins left. Now, look, part of that might be because of the Alex Smith injury. But when good quarterbacks become available, the team that's replacing them needs to realize it's way easier to get worse than to get better. And so am I surprised? Yeah, I am, because it's a hard position. And, you know, while the guy you have maybe has some warts and isn't perfect and is not, you know, Breeze or Russell Wilson or you know, whoever, you know, or Aaron Rodgers, but, you know, you're altered. Like, take Detroit, for example. So are they going to get better or worse? What's their option? What are they going to do that changes it? You know, New England, look, whatever happened with Brady and why that soured, you're going to get better or worse? I think it's easier to get worse. And so, yeah, I am surprised that it's happened. And I do think some of these guys that have become available can play. And I think primarily, especially like if you look at the Cousins situation, you know, it's money motivated. And so when you look at it, you go, okay, like if Dak Prescott ever becomes available, it's clearly been money motivated. And yeah, and that's why the money is so significant that, you know, that probably ends up being the driving force.
Real quick, you mentioned the Lions. What do you think of the Dan Campbell hire?
Well, so I can tell you this about that. I've talked to a few people, and I have some mutual friends with Dan. I don't, you know, really know him personally, but I have some mutual friends. I had people say really, really good things about the process of kind of when he had been hired in Miami. I think Mike Tannenbaum's probably gone on the record on some of the stuff about their experience in Miami with Dan Campbell. For kind of disclosure, I was asked about a few college openings over the last couple of years, and he was somebody that I recommended for people to talk to. I think he could end up being a really good hire. I think that, you know, he's one of these guys that didn't have a ton of buzz, but, you know, has been around good coaches as a player and as a coach, knows a lot about the run game and knows a lot about the passing game. I think he's got a good history of interacting with players. There are a lot of other elements to being a head coach in terms of who you surround yourself with, in terms of who you hire and stuff like that. But I do think that there are probably a lot of good characteristics associated with Dan Campbell that make sense. And by the way, kind of almost exactly like Anthony Lynn, you know, very similar in that regard.
So you're telling us Phil Fulmer didn't listen to you. You told him to get Dan Campbell, and he said, yeah, appreciate it. I'll get Jeremy Pruitt.
Now, listen, in all seriousness, I do know this in terms of the college job stuff, and I've talked to people about this and it came up even times that I, you know, gave his name to people about somebody that I thought they should talk to, is, you know, a lot of people in the college world, like, they want somebody to come in with, like, their college setup ready to go. And so somebody like, you know, Dan, who hadn't been in college football in 10 years, although I do believe he has some experience coaching in college, they want the whole staff. They want to know who it is and where they're recruiting and what their connections are and that type of thing. And I get that. I understand why you may want that. You know, I do think sometimes in doing that, you're underselling somebody's ability to go hire somebody. I mean, look what Clark Lee has done. You know, it's not been the typical, hey, this guy's been doing this for another program and he's going to fit perfectly here doing that. You know, it's been a little bit more outside the box in terms of some of the stuff that he's done, but he clearly has a plan. And so I think that, you know, it'd be reasonable to think, whether it's Dan Campbell going to college or someone somewhere else, you know, they'd be able to do the same thing.
Yeah, in fact, Clark Lee's been dipping more in the NFL pool, what it looks like. I mean, he was going after a guy in Seattle. He gets a guy from the Ravens. So he was looking more of the NFL angle for a lot of his staff members.
Yeah, and well, coaching is coaching. Recruiting is different. Bill was basically told this one time by John Fox, and it made a lot of sense. Scouting and recruiting are two totally different things. If you are an amazing recruiter but a terrible scout, all you're doing is landing bad players. So, you know, recruiting, part of recruiting is the first step of the process, which is identifying who's actually good. So, you know, that's one of college that you need to be a great evaluator so that you recruit the right people.
Last thing quickly, when we talk to you this time next week, who's in the Super Bowl?
I think it is. Is Mahomes playing?
No, don't know. Yeah, he's going to play. That's what I think. But will he last? I don't know.
Kansas City, Green Bay.
All right.
By the way, do you remember, you guys maybe asked me 5 years ago about coaches, and I told you Andy Reid was the best? I'm still standing by that. How awesome was the end of that game?
Pretty amazing.
You're saying that call? How many coaches do that, by the way?
Gutsy.
At midfield. In the shotgun.
Maybe more should.
With a guy who's never been in a playoff game, been in the league 13 years at quarterback. Never been in a playoff game. Pretty incredible.
I still can't believe they got it from 3rd and 14 to 4th and 1.
Yeah.
On the play that they had with that guy.
Tim, good stuff.
He walked off on that.
Did he?
Yeah, Tim walked off.
Wow. Yeah. Mic drop. Well, I mean, good. When you tell us for weeks that Arthur Smith is going to be the coach of the Falcons, you told us 5 years ago Andy Reid is the best coach in the league, yeah, you can drop the mic and hang out.
I agree.
All right, we'll come back. A lot more on the other side. Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.